Ladies and gentlemen, back again for our third week of our Born Rich teleseminar. And your feedback in the first 2 weeks tells me that we've got some folks that are having some breakthroughs that are really grasping what Bob taught the first week and John taught last week. And get ready, because the next 2 weeks you're going to experience some thinking changes, because Bob's had a habit with me and everybody else I know that's ever worked around him of changing some major paradigms. So get ready for that, and welcome to week three. And take it away, Dr. Proctor.
Thanks very much, Vic, and I want to welcome everybody on the line. I was talking to John earlier today, and he's down in Sydney, Australia, so he sends his best wishes. And he suggested that I check and make sure that everyone worked on that image. They worked on the two things that they weren't doing, but they were going to start to do to make that image come true. How'd you know? As you go back and take a look in your action planner, on the self-image concept, if you take a look, I believe it's on page 26, we're asking or suggesting that you make a written description of the kind of person you want to be. And that's really what John was talking to you about. And then it's a matter of executing that image. Now, how do you do it? Well, if you go to page 27, we suggest you let go and let God. As you know, you can study any of the major religions. You're going to find that every one of them will tell you that God is omnipresent. The Spirit of God is within us. And I think our problem is we keep the ideas in our consciousness, and that's as far as they go. We've got to internalize these ideas. We have to turn them over to the spiritual side of our personality. And if we do that, everything's going to start to work, and it's going to start to work very well. If you look on page 28, we point out here that you're a perfect instrument for spirit to express itself through. As you know, there's a power that's flowing to you and through you every minute of every day. It never stops. It's just continually circulating, going to and through you, to and through you. And as this flows into our consciousness, we do have the ability to make any kind of an image out of it we want. Now, in this particular section that John was dealing with, he's suggesting that you stop and ask yourself, what kind of a person do you really want to be? How do you really want to live? And that we want to take it beyond the wish stage. We want to take it beyond the thinking stage. We actually want to internalize it. And on page 28, we suggest here that you see yourself as a perfectly endowed instrument without limitations. Now, how would we go about doing that? I think we have to let ourselves see ourselves that way. In other words, we don't go and look in the mirror and see ourselves as a reflection in the mirror, just a physical person. If we stop and think of all the things that are happening in our body at any given moment, we stop and think how the blood's circulating through our body. It's carrying all the food in and all the garbage out in one sweeping change. It goes through hundreds of miles of passageway every 33 seconds. Our heart may beat, 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 never skip a beat for up to 100 and 100+ years. Well, there's something absolutely miraculous inside of you and inside of me. And so what we want to do is stop and separate ourselves from this materialistic or physical world for a few moments and think, you know, who am I? What is taking place inside of me? You know, I'm not my results. I'm not my story. There's something here that's much greater, that's much stronger, that's much bigger than what meets the average person on a physical level. So we want to start to see ourselves as a perfect expression of an infinite power. Now, when you do, you're going to find it easy, in fact, natural, to expect the good that you desire, and you're also going to understand that doubt simply obstructs the unfoldment of prosperity in our life. You see, when we build the image of what we want, and we internalize that image, and we do that by becoming totally relaxed And let that image just fill our consciousness. Let it permeate and penetrate through every cell of our being. And now, when we entertain doubt, what we've really done is haul that image of beauty, that image of perfection, out of there, and we place the doubt in, and the doubt is a polar opposite image. It's a picture that we don't want to happen. Now we say doubt does not shut down the workings of this power. The power is always working perfectly. The doubt you hold becomes the picture that's going to turn into your physical results. You see, when we're entertaining doubts, that is the self-image that we're planting. And we don't want to entertain the doubt. It's not you or me that's making this happen. And we've really got to understand that. If you go to top of page 29, there's a quote there by Clarence Smithson. He was in charge of Equal Opportunity with World Book many, many years ago. And I was doing a seminar for them, and I was sitting in a coffee shop with him in Indianapolis, I believe it was. And I asked him, to talk to me about faith. The guy had such phenomenal faith. And the description there that you see is the one that he gave me. I think it's perfect. He said, faith is the ability to see the invisible, to believe in the incredible, and that will permit you to receive what the masses think is impossible. You see the invisible. See the you that has not manifest yet. See the more productive person. Some of you have your own organizations. See yourself where you want to be in it. See yourself materially where you want to be. See the relationships that you want to have. Actually see. See the invisible. You see, that's where everything starts. We have the ability to create that image on the screen of our mind. And then believe the incredible. It's incredible to believe that if we put an image in our subjective mind, that image instantly and automatically begins to be expressed with and through us. Now, it's expressed with and through us because the image alters the vibration you're in the second you internalize it. And when you move into a new vibration, there is an attractive force set up, and you begin to attract to you everything you need for the manifestation of the image, and you begin to move towards it. It's like a huge magnetic field. The image that you're planting in your mind, that you have consciously and deliberately written out and built, you turn that image over to spiritual power within you, and instantly and automatically, every molecule of your being moves into a different vibration. Because you're totally in a different vibration, mentally and physically, an attractive force is set up. You will start to see things that you didn't normally see. You'll start to hear things that you wouldn't hear. You'll start to feel like doing things, and you'll have urges to do things that you wouldn't normally be doing. And you will begin to attract to you whatever is required for the manifestation of the image. Now, what you want to do when you're in a totally relaxed state and you're putting yourself in this vibration, you begin to polish the picture then. Literally begin to polish it. Page 26 is where you consciously and deliberately build the picture. And now think of this. When you build the picture, you've impregnated those pictures into cells in your brain. When you let yourself totally relax, look on page 30, we say totally relax and see yourself already in the possession of the good that you desire. In other words, it's already there. Mentally, it is. And as you do this in a totally relaxed state, you're activating all those cells in your brain, and the image that you consciously and deliberately built and impregnated into those cells is going to come back on the screen of your mind. And you start to polish it. You start to add little parts that maybe were missing. And you build it clearer, and it becomes crystal clear. And your emotional state towards it begins to change. And you do this every day. Take the time, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, to totally relax and see yourself as this new person. And then rewrite the image. And you're going to find when you rewrite it, it'll be more complete than the previous one. Now go over to page 31. The next part of the lesson, expect an abundance. Expect an abundance. The mind is a powerful magnet. Now I want you to think of this. And as such, attracts whatever corresponds to its ruling state. Expectation dictates what that ruling state will be, and therefore governs what corresponds to the mind and is attracted into your life. Expectation can be either a blessing or a curse, but either way, it is certainly one of the most powerful unseen forces in your life. Now, why wouldn't a person expect this image to move into form? Well, there's a couple of reasons why. There's no physical evidence of it, and the old paradigm is trying to talk you out of it. When you first build the idea, it's weak. It doesn't have a lot of strength. The old paradigm's got more strength, and it starts to play games with you. Well, think about this for a moment. And that's what stops you from expecting the good that you desire. Now, since we know that, rather than let it stop us, let us take control. You know, in Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill talks about meeting Andrew Carnegie. And let me read you what he wrote here. He said, the favorable break came through Carnegie. Carnegie was the one that introduced him to 500 of the world's most successful people, the old Scotsman, Andrew Carnegie. He commissioned him to write the Laws of Success, and he introduced him to the world's famous. And Napoleon Hill became intimate friends with a lot of those people. Now, he said, the favorable break came through Carnegie, but what about the determination, the definiteness of purpose, and the desire to attain the goal, and the persistent effort of 25 years? It was no ordinary desire that survived disappointment, discouragement, temporary defeat, criticism, and the constant reminding of wasting of time. It was a burning desire and obsession. And that's what you want to work towards building with this new image of yourself. You've got to turn it into a burning desire. Now, how do you do that? Well, Hill said, when the idea was first planted in my mind by Mr. Carnegie, it was coaxed, nursed, and enticed to remain alive. But he said, gradually, the idea became a power under its own power, or a giant under its own power. And it coaxed, nursed, and drove me. Now, he said, ideas are like that. First, you give life, action, and guidance to the idea, and then they take on a power of their own, and they sweep aside all opposition. Isn't that the truth? He was on to say something else that's very interesting. He said, ideas are intangible forces, but they have more power than the physical brain that gave birth to them. They have the power to live on long after the physical brain that's created them has turned to dust. Now, you've got a new idea. You've got a new image of yourself, and that's what it is. It's an idea. The old paradigm is still in control. And this idea in the beginning has to be coaxed, nursed, and enticed just to remain alive. But he said, if you keep working with it, it'll take on a power of its own, and it'll sweep aside all opposition. Well, now, when we study this and we really understand, if I continually build this image, if I continually get emotionally involved, and I see myself as this person, and I use the William James's concept, and I act as if I am this person. Some people say that's faking it. It's not faking it. It's working in harmony with the law. And when you're doing that, to expect to become that kind of a person is the most natural thing in the world. Now, you see, expectation is a very, very powerful force. If you come down on page 31, about the third paragraph, we say expectation can be a triggering mechanism which attracts into your life every good that you desire. However, if you do not exercise extreme caution, expectation can turn just as rapidly into a destructive, lethal enemy. I want you to pay particular attention to the conversations that go on around you tomorrow and the next day. You're going to find that most people expect what they don't want. They're actually expecting what they don't want. Now, why would they do that? Think about it for a moment. Why would people expect what they don't want? Well, the reason for it is because they've been getting it for so long, and they're letting present results control their thinking. I mean, if you keep getting the same result, let's suppose you're a student in school and you get a D in mathematics, and you keep getting every report card, you're getting a D in mathematics. This is the only natural limit for the student to expect to get a D in mathematics. How could they change that? Of course they could change it. They'd have to change the image of themselves. They'd see themselves as a straight-A student. But the old report card is going to control them. Now, we've been training ourselves since we were little children to let our present results control us. Why wouldn't we expect it? The old paradigm is playing games with our mind. And on top of that, there's no physical evidence that this image is manifesting. Now, I like the way Price Pitchett wrote about it in his little book, U Square. He said, the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. Well, think of that. The absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. See, it has not moved into form yet. Think of the farmer that plants his field. Do you know the farmer can go to the bank and borrow money on the strength of a crop that no one can see? You've planted flowers or a garden, I'm sure, yourself. You expected it to grow. Why wouldn't we expect this non-physical seed? Do you know that an idea is made from exactly the same form of substance as a tulip bulb or any other kind of a seed that we see growing around us? And we've got to think this all through. We've got to see the connection between the non-physical world and the physical world. It's all connected by law, the law of vibration. Every level of vibration is referred to as a frequency. Every frequency is hooked up to the one above and the one below. The non-physical world is hooked up to the physical world. It's just the way it operates. And we've got to try and understand that. Now, when we do understand it, and we get this image right, we're going to start to understand that by holding the image in our mind, we're actually causing it to move into form. The way it always works, it never changes. Turn over to page 32. There's a great story here about an elderly couple. I want you to imagine that there's an elderly couple living out in the backwoods. I mean, they are way out. They have never had the experience of electricity. Now think of this for a moment. They have never experienced electricity in their entire life. There's lots of people alive today that have never experienced electricity. At any rate, this couple have travelers stop by periodically, moving from one part of the world to another, and they visit with this elderly couple, and they hear about electricity, but how would you explain electricity to someone that's never experienced it? So they really don't know what the people are talking about. Then in the latter years of their life, they're transported into a small town, and they move into this little house that has these little 8-candle powered bulbs. Well, they'd be absolutely fascinated with these things. They'd turn the light switch, just flip it, boom, there's daylight. Prior to this, they've always had a kerosene lamp or a wax candle. They don't know anything else. They would be flipping these lights on and off and looking at them and laughing and probably talking to them. And pretty soon they get used to this new concept that they're living with. And then one day somebody knocks on the door and they're standing there, they're selling light bulbs. And they get in and they say, well, these things you've got are no good. They're little 8-candle powered bulbs. Well, he said, these are 60s and 100-candle powered bulbs. Oh, no, these are fine. Well, he said, no, wait a minute. So he takes and turns all the lights out but one. And he takes that one light out of a socket, and he puts in a 60 or 100 candle power bulb, and bang, that whole room is illuminated like daylight. They would be blown away. They'd stand just staring at this one bulb. Now try and imagine that salesperson convincing the elderly couple that the power that's illuminating the room had always been there. The magic isn't in the bulb. The bulb is the instrument through which the electricity's flowing. You want more light? Put in a bigger bulb. Do you know that the only limit placed on electricity is the limit that's placing on the forms through which it's flowing? Now think of this for a moment. The bulb didn't make the difference. The power was always there. The bulb was just the instrument that it came through. Well, do you know that you and I are much like the light bulb, and we could add to the metaphor, and much like the elderly couple? Why? Well, because we don't realize that the only limits placed on us are the limits that we choose to place on ourselves. And we build the image, and we properly plant it, and then we begin to expect it to happen. Look on page 34. We say desire is the effort of the unexpressed possibility within, seeking expression without through your action. How do you build desire? You build desire through the repetition of thinking the same thing over and over and over again. You build the picture and you internalize it. You continually plant that idea in your mind. Desire is the effort of that idea seeking expression outside. Now, your ideal, dream, or goal can only become a desire once it's properly planted in universal creative intelligence. That's your subjective mind. That's how you get it. You get it there through totally relaxing and let it fill your being. Actually feel it fill you. Now, once your desire has been firmly established, it's the expectant attitude that ensures your goal or your dream is not uprooted and replaced by any other opposing ideas. You see, desire expresses the idea, and it's expectation that attracts the idea. I've often used fishing as an example. I want you to imagine that you're out fishing, and you cast your line, and the plug hits the water, and bang, a fish hits it. If you don't reel it in, you're never going to have the fish. Well, desire is like casting the line. Expectation is reeling it in. So you not only have to desire it, you have to expect it. Now, Genevieve Beyrand wrote these following steps in a book. She actually got it from the Dory Lectures on Mental Science by Thomas Troward, who's a phenomenal author. All space is filled with the creative power. This creative power is amenable to suggestion. The creative power only works by deductive methods. In other words, it has no ability to change it. It only takes what you give. It can only accept it and express it. Now, Troward in his writing emphasized this last point because it implies that the action of the ever-present creative power is in no way limited by precedent or what has gone on before. In other words, the universal creative power takes its creative direction from the idea or the image that you impress upon it. Now you'd say, well, what do you mean by that, Bob? Well, here's what we mean. You have heard that God is a forgiving God. Forgive means to let go of. We don't have trouble with God forgiving us. We have trouble forgiving ourselves. If we've done something wrong or something hasn't gone right in the past, we have a tendency to keep thinking about it and keep giving energy to it. We want to understand that everything that has happened right up to this moment has been absolutely essential to make us who we are, to prepare us to do whatever it is we're going to do. When we take the new image and impress it upon our subjective mind, the subjective mind of the creative power within us doesn't take into consideration the fact that we've never done this before, or we've always messed up before. That's all gone. It isn't limited by precedent. It'll take whatever we give it and move it into form. That's the absolute law. Now flip over to the next page. You have your action planner with you. That page should be blank. There isn't any number on it. You might want to number the page. Both sides of it blank, I believe. Now, if I were in a seminar, I would suggest everybody says the same. There's a blank page there that you put a number on it. And say, well, what number will I put on it? Well, the previous page was 35 or 34. So that would make the first side 35 and the next one 36. If you go to the next printed page, it's 37. But the truth is you could put 16 or 24 on it. You could put 112 on it. The page is blank. You can put anything on it. The fact that we go from 35 to 37 or 34 to 37 doesn't mean that those two pages are 35 and 36. See, our brain is wired in such a way we say, no, it's 35. No, no. The pages are blank. You can write anything on them you want. And that's the way our life is at every minute. We can put anything in it that we want. But we've got to understand it all operates by law. When you build the image takes a certain period of time before it manifests in form. Now, on page 37, we say, once you fully understand this great truth, the character with which the sensitive reproductive power is invested will become your most important consideration. Now, what do we mean? Once you fully understand this great truth, the character with which the sensitive reproductive power, that's your subjective mind, your unconscious mind, your emotional mind. The character with which the sensitive reproductive power is invested will become the most important consideration for you. You're going to spend some serious time thinking about the ideas that you get emotionally involved with. As to say, once you become aware of this truth, that the universal creative power can only be what you feel and think it to be, it'll become eager and willing to do your bidding. I love the quote a little further down on this page. He said, if you think your thought is powerful, your thought is powerful. Now, prior to that, we've got this understanding enables you to be filled with the expectant attitude and to expect the materialization of your image is going to become natural. You see, when we say that we're expecting something great to happen, why would we be expecting something great to happen? Because we've got a great idea that we're emotionally involved in. And we understand the law. We understand how things are created. There's a creative process. And when we get involved in that creative process and turn that idea over, it automatically begins to move into form. Now, in the next paragraph, we quote James Allen, as a person thinketh in their heart, so are they. See, the subjective mind is the heart. That's the part the early Greeks referred to as the heart, as a person thinketh in their heart, in their subjective mind. And there's nobody can change that. You can't change it. The universal creative power can no more change this law than an ordinary mirror can reflect back to you a different image than the object you hold before it. But remember this, as you think, so are you does not mean as you tell people you think or as you would wish the world to believe that you think. It means your innermost thoughts, that place where no one but you knows the truth. That is what you expect, that is what you attract, and that is what you're ultimately going to get. All things are possible in spirit because in its original state, spirit is a sensitive, unseen creative substance whose sole purpose is the expression, the expansion, and fuller expression. That's what it is. Spirit always wants to express itself in a greater way. Now, you see, what we want to do is really study this. We want to study this creative process. You know, you want to get into the CDs or the recordings of this program and listen to it 1,000 times. As you go through this over and over and over again, It's like putting the pieces of a puzzle together. It starts to make sense. Look on page 38. When your understanding grasps the power to visualize your heart's desire and hold it with your will, it attracts to you all things requisite to the fulfillment of the picture by the harmonious vibration of the law of attraction. Now, understanding comes through study. There's no other way of getting understanding. You study, and you study the right information, you develop an understanding of how your mind and body, how the spiritual aspect of your personality, how it can create the kind of life we want. When your understanding grasps the power to visualize your heart's desire, the heart is the spiritual side of you. The spiritual side of you is always for expansion and fuller expression. Your heart's desire is for you to do better. I remember being stuck for 2 or 3 hours in the airport in Denver with Doug Weed. We were coming back from a program we were on. And I was sitting there, we were talking, and I said, Doug, what do you really want? He said, I just want to do God's will, Bob. It's God's will, greater good. Create. See? But when your understanding grasps the power to visualize your heart's desire and hold it with your will, get a bigger picture, you hold it with your will. It's the will that gives you the ability to concentrate. At first, it has to be coaxed and nursed to stay alive. You've got to concentrate on it. And if you do that, it will attract to you all things requisite to the fulfillment of the picture by the harmonious vibration of law of attraction. Go right down to the bottom of the page. There's a great quote there by William James. He said, often enough our faith beforehand in an uncertifiable result is the only thing that makes the result come true. He's so right. Yeah. This is such a phenomenal program. I mean, this has got some of the best stuff you're going to find anywhere in it. It really is. I have spent my whole life studying this material. And, you know, as you start to dig into it, you're going to find that, it just keeps getting better. But you've got to study it. There's only two ways to alter a paradigm. Just two. One is constant spaced repetition, and the other is an emotional impact. I think it's highly unlikely that we're going to have our life changed by an emotional impact. Generally, when you see an emotional impact, it's of a negative nature. I've always said if there can be a negative, there can be a positive. You can actually create a positive one, and I have seen that done, and it is done on occasion. But that's a pretty good. It's going to be through repetition you're going to change. Now, you didn't come on this line or sign up for this particular program because you were looking for something to do. You don't get programs and just listen to them because you're nothing to do with your time. You do it because you want to improve the quality of your life. Well, by going through these lessons over and over and over and over again, if you take those three lessons there, the one John was talking about last week, the self-image, let go and let God, and expect an abundance. If you just take those three and you play them every day for 90 days, you guarantee you'd walk away a different person. It's so powerful, and yet it's so misunderstood. And we hear this and we know it, but we haven't internalized it, and we've got to internalize it. Vic?
Awesome, awesome classic Bob Proctor. That was outstanding. So who has the first question tonight? And phenomenal subject matter. Who's got a question?
I'll jump in, Ron from Wisconsin.
Yes, Ron.
Actually, I want to kind of get inside Bob's head a little bit, and he can correct me on the details, but I've been listening to your material, and you talked about 1960, you're in a fire hall in Canada, making $4,000 a year, owing $6,000, and someone gave you a book, Think and Grow Rich. And you mentioned, Bob, that you took your income to $175,000 and then to over $1 million. And I'm just kind of curious, and I know you probably covered your thought process through your material here, but I'm just curious, you know, your thought process back then. You read the book once, and did you have to read it a bunch of times to really get your self-image correct? Or, I mean, was this a quick happening or a lot of years that took that? I'm just kind of curious your process.
I have never stopped studying Think and Grow Rich. I have it sitting right here beside me. I was just reading from it.
But I think
my ignorance worked in my favor. I didn't know any better than to just keep listening to it over and over again. I got the record, Earl Nightingale's condensed narration of the book, on a record, and I kept playing the record. I drove around with it on a little battery-operated record player, and I kept reading the book and listening to the record. And I just did exactly what they said. Now, if you do exactly what the program tells you, you're going to move at a rapid clip. Our problem is we don't do exactly what the program tells us. Now, I was going to say, you know, I still don't. I never did. It's just that I did it so well and I moved so fast, but I had no idea what was happening.
Okay.
And then I was prepared to do anything honest to earn money. And I started cleaning floors. I think I might have mentioned this. I passed out on the street. And I thought the answer was work harder, you know, clean more offices. And I worked so hard that I literally fell out exhausted on the street. And it turned out there was cops and ambulances and everybody around. I guess the people thought I had dropped dead. And a little voice in my head said, if you can't clean all of them, don't clean any of them. And so I stopped cleaning offices. I got all dressed up and I got other people cleaning them. And we ended up cleaning them, Toronto, Montreal, Boston, Cleveland, Atlanta, London, England. I mean, the thing just kept growing. But I never stopped studying that. Like, it was almost like I was watching a movie, only the movie was my life. And I was absolutely fascinated with everything that was happening. And I just...
So you read the book and
what... I just did exactly what the book said, you know?
Did you have a goal of $1 million after reading the book, or was that kind of a problem?
No, no, I didn't. I really didn't. I had a goal of 25,000.
Okay.
And I was put, you see, my concept was, though, I'm prepared to do anything honest to earn money. Well, once I got it going, it wouldn't stop. Phil says that in the book. You know?
It will come in abundance.
He tells you that. Pardon?
Yeah, I think, well, how does he say it? It's going to come in abundance when it comes.
Well, he said, when money starts to come, it'll come so fast and furious, you're going to wonder where it was hiding through all the lean years.
I'm looking forward to that.
Well, expect it. Get into a track. You see, what I did, I started to employ, like, I'm a great supporter of network marketing, because network marketing uses what I call the M3 strategy. M3 is where you multiply your income by setting up multiple sources of income. Wealthy people historically have always had multiple sources of income. And prior to reading the book and prior to passing out on the street, I had one source of income, me, working, spending time, slugging it out. But when I passed out then, and I got other people doing it, I had multiple sources. So I got into a concept of earning money that historically wealthy people have always used.
Right.
Had no idea what I was doing. But, you know, many successful people cannot articulate why they're successful. I wasn't satisfied with winning. I had to know why. And that's what this Born Rich program is all about. I believe this is the most phenomenal personal growth program on the market today. But I'm not saying that because I made it. Because I always say I've got license to brag about everything I've got because none of it's mine. I'm just putting in a proposal for the second largest mutual fund company in Malaysia. And they asked our company to do that because Prudential Insurance Company in Malaysia went from the bottom to the top in their industry by using the Born Rich program. It's used throughout their company. If you phone anywhere in Prudential, in Malaysia, and ask them about Born Rich or Singapore, they're going to tell you that's their training program. Everybody uses it. So the thought process is, you know, it's what's on these CDs, it's what's in this program. And by doing it over and over again, you start thinking those thoughts. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, definitely. I got the program, and I wish I would have got it 18 years ago because I think it's foundational to everything else that you listen to.
It is. It's the most phenomenal program. Do you know this program sold for $7,500 when we first made it?
Wow.
Yeah. We just sold it to corporations. We never intended it to be sold the way it is. It was made. We spent hundreds of thousands of dollars filming this. There's 11 and a half hours, and it was being shot like an NFL football game. And it was all live production. I mean, this is a real production. And it was done in such a way that a person is an observer, they're not a participant, not just an observer. It's very well done. It's all on DVD. Now it was on video. But it was sold to corporations. The corporations, the people in the corporations, wanted to take it for their kids to use. And so we had a bit of a dilemma. We didn't know what to do. So we said, well, you know, let's do what the public wants us to do. And so we changed the price of it and started to sell it in large quantities.
I'd like to share something with the group too. Most people on the call probably wouldn't know this, but when Bob was going through at the end of his lesson there, and he was talking about becoming a student and about getting committed to regular study of this type of material and this very material itself, he wasn't just preaching that or teaching that. He walks his talk. I don't know. He's a high school dropout. I don't know whether he ever got his high school degree, but in the times that I've been around him, he is as well-read and well-educated from that reading as any PhD that I know, anyone who I know in academia. So he's not just someone who's, you know, getting on a teleseminar and making some statement. He lives that, and the various Thomas Troward books are very, very difficult books to read, and I don't know anybody that understands those books better than he does. So when he talks about becoming a student, it's something that he's done over the last 40 years. So I would encourage you, I've always believed that if you do what successful people do, you'll get what they have. So, look at the fruit on the tree. And, Bob, I want to thank you for that encouragement, because I think that's probably the key to a lot of the people on this call really breaking out of where they're at now.
Thank you, Vic. So we eat every day. Generally, anyway, most people do, unless they're fasting. We shower. We groom ourselves. Why wouldn't we develop our mind? Because it's giving us everything. We should be taught this as little children. Unfortunately, we're not. You know? Anybody else have a question?
Yeah, hi, this is Steve from Palm Springs.
Yes.
My question is... it's one thing to have this burning desire and to have these visions and these images burn into our brain. It's another thing to put them into action. So the question is, at what point does this convert to action? Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And you see, if there's no action, if we back up to where we started tonight, you build the picture. You have to internalize the picture, and that will develop into desire. If there's no action, there's no desire. There's a serious want, possibly. Desire is the idea in your subconscious mind seeking expression without through your action. And if the actions aren't there, you're not doing this right. You couldn't possibly listen to, those three lessons that I was talking to. If you keep listening to them over and over and over again, you will definitely move into action. You have to. The problem is, we get on the call. Well, I did this teleseminar with Vic, and it didn't work. I remember a guy, Joe Bonney. He was a manager with Metropolitan Life Insurance Company in Toronto here. And he stopped me on the street one day. God, this keeps coming back to my mind over the last little while. I must be going to run into him. But he said, Bob, I sent so-and-so to your seminar and nothing happened. And I said, yeah. Well, he said, I sent him to the seminar and nothing happened. I said, Joe, I can't do it for him. I've only given the information if he doesn't use it. It's like the Quakers have a saying, pray and move your feet. Take one thing. Don't study too broadly. Take one narrow part and listen to it and say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to start doing this. And that's the only CD you listen to. It's the only DVD you listen to. Hook it into a goal. You've got to have the goal. And then think, if I did two things, I'm sure John was talking to you. We've seen companies transform through doing two things. This mutual fund company in Malaysia, they want a 70% increase next year, and we're going to show them how to do it, and they will do it. That's an enormous increase for a big company. It's a pretty big company. And we're going to get the people to do two things. That's all, just two things. And you think, if I do two things, but if I did them every day, and just listen to those CDs, then it'll start happening. And if the action's not there, then you're not doing it. Like, you're not studying it right. I don't know if that helps you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I understand that.
Good. Okay.
Time for maybe one or two more calls while we wait for a question here, Bob. What is there something this week between now and the last lesson next week? Something that comes to mind that we might all do that takes drives these lessons home harder?
I would like them to continue with what John suggested, the two things that's going to execute this image. Now, I'm going to ask you to rewrite the image every day, put it on the dash of your car, put a little symbol up there or something, I don't care what it is, just, you know, leave an envelope on the dash of your car, and that envelope is to trigger the picture in your mind. Am I expecting it? Am I really expecting it? And keep reminding yourself, am I expecting it? Because expectation is a mindset. And when we begin to expect the good that we desire, all kinds of good things are going to start to happen. But you've really got to expect it. And you see, the truth is most people expect what they don't want. Raymond Halliwell said you should never expect something you do not desire, and you should never desire something that you don't expect. Most people expect to get headaches. And you know why? Because they've always been getting them. And so they buy themselves great big bottles of pills. They actually expect a headache. Ask them if they want a headache. No, they don't want a headache. Well, why are you expecting it? Well, I don't know. You see, it's habit. It's habit to expect what we don't want. So write the image out, put it on a card or in a slip of paper in your pocket, and every day keep rereading it and say, what two things? I've got to do these two things every day, and do it over and over again, and keep asking yourself, am I expecting it?
All right, we have our marching orders. Now, we got time for one or two more questions. Someone else have a question?
Here's an interesting observation. I would imagine somebody does have a question, but some people have questions and they're afraid to ask them. Now, you might ask yourself, why would I be afraid to ask them? Do you know that that has to do with self-image? Do you know there's no such thing as a foolish question? It's interesting.
Yep.
I can remember when I wouldn't have asked a question. I wouldn't hold my hand up in public. I wouldn't speak if there was a group of people around. It would scare the daylights out of me.
Now, this is Doug from Oregon, and I just want to make an observation. For all my life, and I'm pushing 70, I have had a poor image of, as far as money's concerned. I grew up in a very tight home, and your seminar has led me to think I can earn $5,000 a week. And already things are coming to me, just like you said. They're coming to my mind, how I can begin doing that. And tonight was another a piece of the puzzle. Thank you.
That is so good. You know something? Forget your age. How old would you be if you forgot your age? You see,
probably be about
oddly enough,
40.
I was talking to my wife about this at dinner, and I was saying, you know, feelings know nothing about age. They don't know anything about distance or space or anything. And you get wound up on an idea, and like, I'm almost 70. I have a hard time believing it. I got as much energy as most people, 20. It doesn't age, you know, forget it. Just get out there and make it happen. Now, that is really great. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. One more question before we go. Don't miss this golden opportunity. You got Bob Proctor live. You don't get too many opportunities for a guy with this kind of wisdom to ask him any question at all. There is no silly question, no wrong question. It's just a question. So who wants to end the evening tonight with a question and sends us home with?
This is Gene in Minnesota.
Okay, Gene.
Hi, Gene. My question, I'm having a terrible time identifying what my real goal is, what do I really want, and I'm having a heck of a time identifying that. Also, reading the lessons, it talks about picking out six people that I admire that are successful, etc. I don't know six people. I don't know any of them, so I'm having trouble with that one. But the thing I'm having the biggest problem with is really identifying what do I really want? I know what
I have.
You know
something, Gene? Gene, what you want to do, first of all, the truth is you can have anything you want. But take something. It doesn't matter what it is. What kind of a car do you have?
11, 12-year-old Ford Explorer.
Okay. Would you like a new one?
Yeah, I'd like a new one.
Okay, well, set that as a goal. Now, that's not a worthy destination or anything, but it's something, and say, I'm going to do that. I'm going to see how fast I can actually get in, and go and get a picture of it. Literally get a picture of it. And get a picture of yourself in it. Now, it's not necessarily to get the new car, Gene.
Uh-huh.
It's to gain a confidence in how to get things you want. Because you see, you probably have serious doubts in your mind as if you could have what you really want. We have dreams, but we reject them.
Mm-hmm. I guess
I'm going to do this. And what I'm going to do, I'm really going to put this process to a test. I'm going to get good at it. Do you know that you could get so good at this, Gene, that you could actually start teaching people how to identify the goals? I have.
That'd be great. I know. Some of the wisdom and things that you talk about, just as an example, just hits home so heavily when you talked about people don't want a headache, but they expect it, so they buy a large bottle of pills. It's just wisdom like that is just phenomenal. I'm just really appreciative, and I'm very happy and grateful to have this course and to be a part of this program.
Fantastic. Well, Bob, I want to thank you for a great evening, and
Bob.
It was just who is this?
I said, thanks, Bob.
Okay, is this Gene?
No, this is Gene.
Okay, Gene, real quickly before we go, let me ask you a question. How'd you meet your? I think you said your wife is on the call as well.
Yes, she is. No,
okay, how did you meet your wife?
Well, actually, kind of a long story, but I lived in Phoenix, Arizona, and I met her through a friend of mine's girlfriend that came down to visit me, and she lives up here in Minnesota.
Okay, well, those six people that you need to meet, you can meet them through someone you know now.
Great. Okay.
I just wanted to know how you met your wife, because you had to meet her somehow. And she's the most important person in your life right now, so you
That's
had
great.
To meet her somehow. So those six people you need to meet, you say you don't know six people? Go meet them the same way you met your wife.
Okay, that's something that we have to brainstorm about. Yes, we will do that.
Okay. Well, Dr. Proctor, you've done an outstanding job. I want to thank everyone. We will have an announcement coming by email of when this call will be available for playback, and I can assure you this is one you do want to go back and play back a number of times this week. And, again, it will be available in the near future on an MP3 download. So you can put it in your permanent library. And same time, same channel next week at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank everyone for calling in, and thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Vic.
Good evening.
Talk to you all later, folks.
Thanks, Vic.
Thanks.
Thank you.